Ecclesiastes chapter 5, beginning in verse 10. This is God's word. He that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver, nor he that loveth abundance with increase. This is also vanity. When goods increase, they are increased that eat them. And what good is there to the owners thereof, saving beholding of them with their eyes? The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eat little or much, but the abundance of the rich will not suffer him to sleep. There is a sore evil which I have seen under the sun, namely riches kept for the owners thereof to their hurt. But those riches perish by evil travail, and he begetteth a son, and there is nothing in his hand. As he came forth of his mother's womb naked, shall he return to go as he came, and shall take nothing of his labor which he may carry away in his hand. And this also is a sore evil, that in all points as he came, so shall he go. And what profit hath he that hath labored for the wind? All his days also he eateth in darkness, and he hath much sorrow and wrath with his sickness. There is something true about the axiom that science can ruin a good dream, at least a good dream when you are a youngster, because I remember when I was, 12, 13, being a fan of the cartoon television show DuckTales. And in that show, the character Scrooge McDuck had this huge vault of gold coins, and he would regularly go swimming in his vault of gold coins. And I thought to myself, that looked really fun. And then I realized that if you ever tried to do that, you would hurt yourself severely. Because unlike Scrooge McDuck, who could dive into his coins and swim through them, don't try that at home. You will hurt yourself, because coins, of even a big, huge pile of coins, is not anything like water. So much for money being able to make you happy. And that's Solomon as he comes into this analysis of the problem of wealth and the wise person's use of property. There's three sections here that I mentioned. This first part, we see the problem of wealth hoarded. At the end of the chapter, we see the proper use of wealth. And in chapter 6, we will see the evil of wealth's inability to satisfy. But here, Solomon begins with the evils of the rich. Again, not the evils that the rich perpetrate, not the evils that they use to get their wealth. Solomon here has a very neutral view of the way in which this wealth is received. Really, his focus is on these people have worked for this wealth, and there's almost a positive note there. They have been very industrious. They have done their jobs. They have been prospered in life and been very wise in the way they use their money. But Solomon reflects on the relationship between that person and their riches and how it does not aid them. In three sections, we can see what Solomon is saying here. He begins talking about man's stockpile. Secondly, man's senselessness. And finally, man's shade. Man's stockpile, as man gathers all of this money, man's senselessness, as all of these things don't find a meaning or purposeness in man's shade, as he ends his life reflecting on the evils of that money or what that money has done for him. He begins with man's stockpile. He begins with the evil suffered by those who think that wealth will satisfy their longings and so collect all of this stuff. The collection of things and the contrast of the sleep of the rich and the sleep of the laborer. He begins with the vanity of riches alone. In verse 10, he that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver, nor he that loveth abundance with increase. This is also vanity. Silver doesn't satisfy, Solomon says. More does not fill. This is an axiom that we have understood for many a years, that he who dies with the most toys does not win. That this stuff that people collect does not satisfy what they want. that their loving of these things doesn't fill the emptiness. And Solomon sees the reality of this emptiness, and he ends with, this is vanity. And for us, we sometimes think, why is that? Why does he end this verse with this statement that this is vanity? Because what he is saying is that this loving of these things and not satisfying, this reality is vanity. There is a brokenness to this truth. The thing that you love, when you get it, should satisfy you. Solomon understands this reality and this kind of axiom and thinks to himself, why is the world the way it is? They don't understand this. Things don't satisfy your desire for things. And that they don't means something is wrong. There is something wrong with the world, Solomon says. There's something vain about loving these things. In verse 11, he continues. Not only does this pursuit of things doesn't work, but there are other costs to riches. When goods increase, they are increased that eat them. And what good is there to the owners thereof, saving beholding them with their eyes? This, Solomon is saying, this reality. When you get more stuff, you need more. You spend more of your stuff to keep your stuff. And it seems like for the rich, the only joy that you get out of this arrangement is watching the money flow through your hands. As quickly as you get it, it goes out and you just get to watch it. In one of my favorite episodes of Adventures in Odyssey, yes, I love Adventures in Odyssey. Back in the day when you had the real wit, Hal Smith, who made his mark in the Andy Griffith Show playing Otis, there was a story called Tales of Moderation. In this story, Connie comes with a realization. She knows that John Avery Whittaker is very wealthy. He's a very successful businessman. He's done a lot of inventions. He's made a lot of money. And he lives very simply. And so she finally asks Whit why this is. If he has so much money, why does he live more so simply? And Whit gives her three stories that he has written to kind of as parables explain why he has chosen to live the way he does. And the second one is entitled Who Owns Who. It's a very fanciful story as this guy acquires all of these various, back in the 70s we called them mod cons, modern conveniences, things that helped you live your life. And as he acquires them, they begin speaking to him, which, you know, brings the fantastical part. And all that they do is demand of him that he clean them, that he service them. And the point of the story is that the more stuff you have, the more it places a demand on your time and your resources. And that's what Solomon is saying here. He's saying these people gather all of this stuff, and as they keep gathering all their stuff, there's more expenditure and service of that stuff. That the person who owns all this stuff, the only pleasure that he could possibly get out of it is just watching his money flow through his hands. As much as quickly as he can acquire it, it seems to be going out. Here also is his sense of frustration. You get stuff and it doesn't satisfy. You want more and you get more and you're not satisfied with abundance. This is futile. And when you get stuff, then you have to pay more to keep the stuff. And so all you do is watch the money flow through your hands. So Solomon ends with this contrast between the master and what might have been considered one of his employees in verse 12. The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eat little or much, but the abundance of the rich will not suffer him to sleep. Some commentators say that the focus here is on what people are eating, that the laborer might eat much or might eat little, and the rich man eats too much and has indigestion and can't sleep. But there's a possibility that Solomon doesn't have just health and physicality, but a psychological reality going on, that the laborer is able to relax at night and sleep well. Whereas the rich man, because he has all of these vanities, has all of these conflicts going on in his life, is unable to sleep. And even if we take the physical concept behind this, why is it the rich man that eating so much? The question might come up, is he trying to fill that void that is so evident in these verses with food? It's not that the wealthy suffer as such, but the unsatisfied rich that cannot sleep. Meanwhile, the laborer seems content with little or with much. Solomon gives us this view of those who have wealth because he wants us to be appalled. We have in our 21st century idea and mindset this idea that the wealthy in some respects are bad people. But that wasn't the case in Solomon's day, even in the disciples' day. Remember when the rich young ruler came to Jesus and he goes away sorrowful, and Jesus says to the disciples, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. And the disciples almost threw their hands up in despair. Well, who can do it then? Because their assumption was that having riches was a sign of God's blessing. If those whose God is blessed can't do it, how can anyone else? And Solomon wants us to be appalled at the fact that these people who seemingly God has blessed with riches and wealth and property have such a futile, vain, unhappy, disturbed life. One of the most balanced proverbs that, in my mind, appears in the 30th chapter of the book of Proverbs of the person Agur, when he writes, two things have I required of thee, deny me them not before I die, remove far from me vanity and lives. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with food convenient for me, lest I be full and deny thee and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and take the name of God in vain. This guy has some sense. He says, give me the food appropriate, or in New Testament terms, give me my daily bread. Because if I am rich, then I might think in my heart, why do I need God? Or if I am poor, I might think I might steal and blaspheme the name of the Lord who saved me. This guy has it right. But Solomon here is struggling with this reality. And he wants us to feel this abandonment, this unsatisfying, vain life, so that we understand his point that under the sun nothing can satisfy without God. That these people are gathering their riches and wealth, loving silver and loving abundance instead of loving God. They're finding that all they're doing is watching their wealth go on, and they can't sleep at night because they are pursuing the wrong things. Man is stockpiling for himself all of this wealth, but he's not stockpiling for himself what he truly needs: peace with God. This senseless life, Solomon continues with the narrative in line with what we have seen before, where these proverbs kind of fit together in a narrative form, as if Solomon is telling a story, maybe of someone he knows, maybe just one that he made up. And there is a conclusion about the evil of this reality. He tells the story of a lost investment and a lost inheritance. Look at verse 13. There is a sore evil which I have seen under the sun, namely, riches kept for the owners thereof to their hurt. He tells this story of an evil sickness, something badly wrong and infectious. Something that's not limited to one person, but in this story, it seems to be indicative of the way in which these things seem to work themselves out repeatedly throughout the life, throughout history. Again, we see that refrain. This is something that occurs under the sun, or analyzed without consideration of God or the transcendent. He has seen this, that there are riches that are kept. This is kind of his theme or topic sentence, riches kept for the owners thereof to their hurt. That means people are keeping stuff, people are hoarding stuff, people have riches, and they don't benefit them, they hurt them. He's continuing on with the theme of the previous three verses where he's been talking to the stockpile of riches that don't do anything, that bring woe instead of weal. These riches are kept and they don't benefit, they don't help the owners of them, but they hurt them. This is confusing and confounding to our minds. How can riches harm the owners? Under the sun, it doesn't make sense because these inanimate things should not be, it shouldn't be possible for these things to harm humans. What that which is owned ought not to damage the one who owns it. But Solomon says, yes, but that is the case. And so Solomon explains how this happens. But those riches perish by evil travail, verse 14. The language here is absolutely clear. It's basically riches perish by evil work. And it's unclear what evil activity, what has happened. Is it an investment that failed, or is it a work that failed, or is it a work that didn't turn out the way it was supposed to? And however we parse the reality of what happened to cause these riches to go away, there's one thing that's absolutely clear about this verse, that Solomon is talking about a catastrophic loss, where one who had a lot of property and possessions and wealth loses everything. And Solomon wants to demonstrate that the harm of those who keep wealth first comes from this catastrophic loss. You want to know how riches can harm you? Because you become to rely upon them, and then in a moment they can be gone. Stock market crashes, we understand and know. Other ways of losing wealth can be very evident. But here, that is what Solomon wants us to understand, that part of that pain, part of the way in which these riches hurt owners is through their catastrophic loss. But that loss also creates additional effects. Look again at verse 14. And and he begetteth a son, and there is nothing in his hand. Solomon thinks of the effect of this loss of the next generation. And this is more significant than it is today, thanks to estate taxes. In Solomon's day, people were concerned with the expansion of the family fortune and estate. That there was a sense in which you were to take what your father had given you and expand and grow the family fortune and the estate, the family estate. And to, on your watch, be the one that oversaw the collapse of that estate was a mark of shame. To have nothing to pass on to the next generation was a travesty. Solomon adds something that could either apply to the owner or to the son in verse 15. As he came forth of his mother's womb, naked shall he return to go as he came, and shall take nothing of his labor, which he may carry away in his hand. The context indicates that the father is the antecedent of the pronoun. Though once he was rich, now he will die the way he was born, with nothing. He dies having nothing to show for all of his work, nothing for the next generation to take pleasure in. Solomon doesn't have in mind here what we think of as prodigality. This is not the prodigal son being retold. There is nothing here to suggest that what has happened is in any way the fault of the one who has been investing or doing this work. It's just something that happened that the wealth vanished. And this is a reality that wealth is intrinsically volatile in this sin-stained world. Careful planning helps, but it cannot make you future-proof. I often had discussions with Dr. Jones, the wise economist, and he gets me thinking about economics and economic ideas, and I thought to myself, all right, how do I set up an investment schema that would be immune from anything? And all it takes is a world war, and all the all of the ideas are lost. All the bets are off. Our hope cannot be in possessions. Our trust cannot be in riches. Our hope cannot be based upon things and having stuff. Solomon's evil sickness is this rich man who dies with nothing. And this under the sun is worse than the truth that all die with nothing. You remember that has been the reality of death has been in Solomon's mind for most of this book. And he's already talked about the reality of death and how you leave stuff behind and you don't know what the next generation is going to do with your stuff, whether it be good or ill. He's talked about you worked and built all this stuff, and yet in your life you see the collapse of the stuff that people built before you. And that's bad. And here Solomon seems this is the worst of all, this evil sickness, this really bad thing is that you worked and you built, and at the end of your life, and during your life, you see it all come crashing down so that when you wanted to leave something to the next generation, you die with nothing. And under the sun, that is worse than all of the truth that all die with nothing. Under the sun, this is true for all. And this reality, the reason that this is so bad is that Solomon sees you working for this, the under the sun people working for this stuff, working to add something, to make their life matter by leaving something to the next generation. And when you die with nothing, did your life even matter under the sun? But not so for us Christians. Solomon wants you to feel the pressure of that reality of life under the sun because he wants you to choose a different way. But for us, Christian, what we do matters. And it doesn't matter what we leave physically to the next generation. But what we do for Christ matters, even if we never see the result of it in our life. But by our faithful obedience to God, He is using us in His plan. And because His plan is eternal, unchangeable, and perfect, we know that what we do will matter, though we never see it, though the world never appreciates it. We do not live in man's senseless list. We do not stockpile that false riches that man does. And we do not have his shade, his death. As with his earlier comments about death, the reality of death preoccupies Solomon's mind as he thinks about life. In light of that evil sickness, he sees life under the sun without profit and without light. Solomon begins by reiterating what we have just said in verse 16. And this also is a sore evil, that in all points as he came, so shall he go. And what profit hath he that hath labored for the wind? He reminds us of that evil sickness. What's the point, asks Solomon? You spent your life toiling, laboring, sweating, enduring hardship and deprivation, toiling for the wind for nothing. Solomon here is not criticizing the wealthy or accusing them of ill-gotten gains. He's talking about people who we would respect, people who have worked hard for their wealth, have acted wisely, invested wisely. Then unforeseen, unavoidable circumstances occurred that eliminated their wealth. They toiled, they worked hard, they exhausted themselves and end up with nothing. So what's the point, Solomon asks. This is sore evil, that you go as you came, that you didn't add anything to the world, to your people, to your family, to your nation. Solomon bludgeons us over the head with this thought. He does not want us to ignore the reality of life under the sun, the pointlessness of existence without God. He concludes with the effect of this pointlessness of life in verse 17. All his days also he eateth in darkness and hath much sorrow and wrath with his sickness. It is as if he takes that darkness of a useless, worthless death, a death with nothing, and brings it back to the present. It seems as if those who are currently toiling for those riches that might be gone in a moment do so in this horrible life where they eat in darkness. There's a cloud ever over them, even when they seem to be eating or enjoying the fruits of their labor. They do so with this haunted concept, because all of their hope of meaning and purpose is bound up in these things. They do so and live with sorrow and wrath, anger. Remember that eating is the way to enjoy your depression. To do so in darkness was to frustrate your enjoyment. There's a frustration here. One commentator mentions that Ecclesiastes is in a lot of ways Eden lost, talking about what should have been good things in the garden and in perfection, that because of sin, these things have been ruined. There is spoilation here. Life is not good. It has much that vexes it. It has sickness and rage. This is life truly lived under the sun. I'm amused a lot of times by nihilistic or existential philosophy that says, yes, life is purposeless and meaningless, but you live in with your own sense of purpose despite the purposelessness of life. And Solomon will look at them and like they had lost their minds. Because instead of meaningless and purposelessness working against that, making you some kind of Superman or hero, Solomon said, no, you're just deluding yourself. The appropriate response to purposelessness is eating in darkness with sorrow and anger. So, friend, do you identify with Solomon's portrayal of life? Does this idea, does this reality of living in darkness with futility and frustration, does it describe you? It describes most of the people today. It describes most people who are striving to get something. And that something might be possessions or money or fame or likes on their Facebook or subscriptions to their YouTube channel. Next promotion, the next position. But those things cannot satisfy. They end up in futility and darkness and sorrow and anger. And that is the life of most in the world, but that doesn't have to be your life. Solomon tells us all of these things. Solomon shows us the horror of life under the sun so that we choose a different way. Jesus came to show us the meaning and purpose and joy that we can have in a life not under the sun, but before God. And if you receive Him, all of Him, you begin a new life, a life that matters. A life that you don't have to make matter. Because you, by your finite ability, cannot make your life matter. But the Almighty God, through Christ, by uniting Him to you, will make your life matter. Will you receive Him today? Christian, we often don't appreciate what we have in Jesus. And I think it's because we have lived in the light so long that we forget that there is darkness at all, the darkness from which we have been liberated. Yes, we realize that there are dark parts of our heart and we struggle against our sin, but it takes someone like Solomon to take us to those places where we forget that we once were. Or if you're like me at the tender age of 5 becoming a Christian, it's very hard for me to envision that I had a fully realized nihilistic worldview back then. And it's good for Solomon to take us there, to remind us of what we have in Christ. We forget that our lives matter when they didn't before. We forget that we live when others don't. How foolish. And so let us purpose that this week that we are going to remember with all the gospel of Jesus and live before Him with joy and in that purpose that He gives us.